At the Interior Department, the Bureau of Land Management has discretion to grant exceptions to the rules for oil and gas drilling on federal land. But how often the agency does so, well, that's impossible to tell. It doesn't keep track. For more, Frank Rusko, Director of Natural and Environmental Issues at the Government Accountability Office. Frank, good to have you back.
Thank you, Tom. Good morning.
Now, the policy for these exceptions to the rules goes back to 2007, so it's a little surprising they don't track it since they established the policy a decade ago.
Yes, it is. They have a clear policy to track it and also to evaluate the success of their actions. And in neither case are they doing that in a consistent fashion, nor are they documenting it consistently when they actually do perform these actions.
Well, let's back up for just a moment. Give us an example of what a rule might be that would require or justify an exception, and how would that work?
You bet. So let's say that you've applied for and received a lease and a permit to drill for oil and gas on a tract of land. And let's suppose that also that on that land there is a nesting site for some wildlife. And some protected bird or really any kind of wildlife that is there for part of the year, and that drilling operations, because they're loud and there are trucks coming and going, it would disrupt that natural behavior. Then when you get your permit to drill, it might say you cannot drill during the months of May and June because these are the times when those activities will be occurring. And the operator could file for an exception to that requirement of the lease, and they might do so in a situation where, let's suppose they're out there, but in this particular year, no wildlife are showing up. And if that's the case, then they could apply for an exception. BLM should go out, take a look, see if that's true, and if they approve and agree with what the operator is saying, then they could apply an exception to the requirement and allow drilling.
And even though they don't track the granting of these exceptions, do they have any idea of how often they are requested?
Maybe
that's impossible.
Yeah, you go there to the offices. Some of them are tracking this. Some of them are not tracking it. Some are tracking it some of the times, and there's no consistency. So overall, we really don't have any visibility on how often these things are being asked for and how often they're being granted.
And what does it look like? What are the attributes of the offices that do track it well?
Well, so when an office tracks it well, they will have internal processes where they will record when a request comes in. They'll record key elements of their decision-making process, and then after that, they'll follow up to make sure that what they've approved is actually happening.
That is to say, if the driller said, well, there's no Mr. and Mrs. Eagle here this year, so we don't have to worry about their nesting, they would go out and make sure there's no nest at the area where the applicant indicated.
Absolutely. And then they would document that, so you would know, okay, they approved this exemption, and it was for a good reason. And that's kind of what we would want. You know, these federal lands have multiple uses. So, you know, there's recreation, there's hunting and fishing, and then there's resource development. And so it's important that BLM track its decision making in a very consistent and transparent way, so all of the interested parties can know that their interests are being protected on these public lands.
And there's 45 field offices, correct, for BLM?
Yes.
And do all of the data that they gather add up to one place that you could look at, and here is the BLM permitting data?
No, and this is something that is sort of endemic to BLM. We found this again and again when we go and look at these things. The central databases often do not capture accurately what's going on, because in all of these little field offices, and it's partly because of staffing shortages in various places, but also it's just that they have different processes for following the rules that they're supposed to follow. And so when you add it all up, you have to go to the field offices. You have to see what data they collect. You have to collect it. And sometimes, you might find one office that collects it on a spreadsheet, another that just has paper files that you can look through and write down the information yourself. And there is no good central database for this.
Because if there was, then the places that aren't gathering all of the data would become apparent in a moment.
Yes, that's correct.
We're speaking with Frank Rusko, Director of Natural and Environment Issues at the GAO. And also, in the course of this investigation, you found that when it comes to the exceptions process, there's also a lack of public involvement, which is different from the way it works when there is the original lease that is sought.
Yes, that's true. And it's important to note why that's a problem. So the public is involved in the planning process and the leasing process because, for example, as I said, there are multiple uses to these public lands, so there are many people interested in protecting their own interests. So, for example, hunters and fishermen would like there to be open lands for that are not covered by oil and gas wells, but also environmental groups might that are trying to protect endangered species or that sort of thing would want to weigh in with comments about specific information they have about an area that's being thought about to lease for oil and gas. But in this particular case, when they're providing exceptions to requirements that are within the lease and within the permit to drill, the public really has no visibility into this. And this is important because you may have, in your comments for the leasing process, said, yeah, it's okay to develop oil and gas here, but note that this is the natural nesting ground, as you say, a nesting pair of eagles. So make sure that you're not disrupting that during the time when the eagles are nesting.
And I guess someone using the land for another purpose, with the understanding that nothing is happening at that particular oil well or gas well at this particular time of year, could be surprised to, say, snowmobile up there or drive up there or hike up there, and all of a sudden you're in the midst of some sort of industrial operation that the original permit said would not be occurring at this time.
That's exactly true. And, we don't know the extent to which that is happening, and that's partly because Interior is not tracking their decision-making process consistently, nor are they following up with inspections to make sure that their decisions are actually being followed.
So what were your main recommendations to Interior, and did they concur with them?
Well, we made a number of recommendations, six in to be precise, but what we did is we said, look, you need data to track this exception data when these decisions. When you are making these decisions, you've got to track it. It has to be consistent so you can compare across field offices and make sure that bureau-wide they're doing things correctly. And to do that, you really need written procedures that go across the bureau that dictate how information is to be gathered and how are you to make these decisions. And then also, we need to clarify when and in what way the Bureau is supposed to follow up its decisions and go out and inspect and make sure that what they said should be done is being done.
And they pretty much concurred with those?
Yeah, they generally concurred, and we hope that they will make those changes. And we think, it's time for BLM to get a little bit more serious about making its databases up to date and more centrally accessible.
Frank Rusko is Director of Natural and Environmental Issues at the Government Accountability Office. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Find a link to his report and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.